Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Welcome to Life and Art from FT Weekend. I'm Lila Raptopoulos, and this is our Friday chat show. Today, we are talking about Taylor Swift's new album, The Tortured Poets Department, which was the outrageously anticipated album released last week. It quickly broke records, becoming the first album in Spotify history to surpass 300 million streams in a day. And 2 hours after it was released, Taylor Swift announced that it was a surprise double album with 31 tracks instead of the expected 16. The Tortured Poets Department is widely interpreted as an album about breakups and fame. It has references to her six-year relationship with British actor Joe Alwyn, which ended last year, and her short subsequent fling with the 1975 singer Maddie Healy, and her new boyfriend, football star Travis Kelce. Today, we have our favorite music duo back with us to talk about it. They were here last to talk about Cowboy Carter. I'm Lila, and all my friends smell like weed or little babies. Joining me in New York is the U.S. labor inequality correspondent. She's working her life away just to pay for a timeshare down in Destin. It's Taylor Nicole Rogers.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And on the line from London, he knew what he wanted, and boy, he got her. It's our great FT music critic, Ludovic Hunter-Tilney. Ludo, welcome.
Thank you, Lila. Hello.
Hello. Okay, so let's talk about this album. Top line, what did you think? Ludo, let's start with you.
I enjoyed the album. I think myself, having not so rated its predecessor, Midnights, which was a huge hit, I think that this is a more cohesive album, one which makes better use of its themes, sounds better. And so for me, it may turn out to be the underrated Taylor album as a result of the previous album having been overrated. I do think it does well at projecting a sort of the sort of downbeat aspects of a breakup album with the sort of more pop elements that you would expect from Taylor Swift.
Okay. Taylor, what about you?
For me, this was an album of high highs and low lows. I say this as a Swiftie who first saw Taylor in concert before her first album even came out. Mm-hmm. I've been in this game for a long time. And I did really, really enjoy most of the album. Like, the first 16 tracks I thought were really great. When we got into the anthology, the bonus tracks, mm-hmm. I think there were entire tracks that could have been deleted.
Yeah.
And so for me, that was difficult to process mm-hmm. because I felt like we were going somewhere and then we kind of just got lost like 90 minutes in.
Okay, so for context, we've got sort of the experienced music critic's point of view. We've got the true Swiftie since the sixth
since
grade.
Since the beginning.
Yeah, since the beginning point of view. I am a Fairweather fan. I've always liked her enough. I've liked her more as she's gotten more famous because she's just around more. I found on first listen, I got quite bored by this album and it felt a little, because we've been so saturated with her, it felt sort of like a AI version of her in a weird way. Some of the songs that felt quite familiar to old songs, it all felt sort of beige. But then on second listen and third and fourth, I started to like it more and some songs really stood out and I started to appreciate it. I feel like I would love to edit down this album into like a tight 11.
Okay.
That's my Taylor Swift, my version of this album, and pretend that that the other 20-something just didn't exist.
Yeah, I can see that.
Ludo, I've been dying to ask you. So you wrote your review not knowing that this was a double album. That was like a total secret even to critics. And you really liked it as a single album. How did you feel when it doubled?
So I have to say,
did it change your opinion?
So the Tortured Poets Department Anthology, or whatever the title of the whole thing is a huge experience. It's a monster. The thing is a mountain. And I mean, I think we do need to hack away at it in order to try to work out what we mean when we talk about the album. So for me, the extra tracks, I enjoyed listening to them. They were all right to listen to. They're well made. They sound to me like vault tracks mm-hmm. from Folklore and Evermore, her sort of quieter right. pandemic era albums. They sound to me like something which belonged to that particular of her eras and don't necessarily mm-hmm. have a lot to do with the current one.
I think I agree. Consistency has been something that she struggled with since 1989, mm-hmm. In my mind. I'm just thinking back to like I also went to a listening party on Friday night. Well, I'm really exposing myself, but I went to a Taylor Swift listening party on Friday night mm-hmm. and everyone had the same reaction. And it was that we felt like the consistency has leveled off mm-hmm. and that makes albums harder to enjoy when you feel like you're on a flow and then you get this song out of left field and you're like, what's going on?
Yeah.
There wasn't the same cohesive story that I'm used to hearing from Taylor. But there were some really great songs.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I would love to talk about the best and worst songs on this album.
Yeah.
In British terms, the bangers and the clangers, if you will. Ludo, bangers. What is one song on this album that you really loved?
The one which really stands out for me is So Long London. Maybe yeah. as a Londoner, I feel this song with a particular sort of like, that sort of cuts particularly deep. This song is the one which seems to be most directly about the breakup of the 6-year relationship with Joe Alwyn, the British actor, mm-hmm. of which a lot mm-hmm. had been made that this album was going to be about.
Right.
This song is very clearly about that. And for me, it is a song which is full of feeling. It's very well made. It opens with her doing her a sort of multi-track Taylor doing vocals in the style of London's bells ringing. It's a really artful song. Mm-hmm. It's full of feeling. I love it.
Loved it too. I also really liked, maybe this is an unpopular opinion, but I liked Down Bad.
That was yeah. on my list. Yeah. It's my current favorite.
It sort of was like a Lana Del Rey feeling.
Yes.
A kind of R&B feeling song. I really thought it was good. And I think she's really like perennially good. And in a lot of the songs, she reminds me how good she is at pinpointing very specific breakup feelings. It conjured the faces of many exes of mine. And I thought that was like, I don't know. I think she really nailed it when she nailed it on this album.
I agree. The ones I would add to that are But Daddy, I Love Him, which
yes.
I think is a classic Taylor pop track, which I really loved. And then Florida, which I thought was very musically interesting.
So you work your life away just to pay for a timeshare down in Destin, Florida.
What about the clangers? What were the songs that you really didn't like?
I think So High School is her worst song since Me. And it pains me to say it. I think the lyricism is just ridiculous. It just sounds silly.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me uncomfortable to think of Travis Kelce feeling her up while his friends are playing Grand Theft Auto. I can't. And I have to say, I'm not the only one that feels this way.
You know how to ball, I know Aristotle. Brand new, full throttle. Teach me while your bros play Grand Theft Auto, it's true.
There's something very insulting also about saying, you play ball, I know Aristotle.
Yeah.
I think it's the line that's like, I'm that much smarter than you. I don't know. I don't think really, if that's, if the love of my life wrote that song about me, I would probably walk right into the East River.
Well, I have to confess, sort of sotto voce that I quite like that song, I'm afraid.
You
what?
Did?
No, I tell
why?
You, I quite like that song and I'm now embarrassed to quite like it. I am actually now feeling embarrassed.
Be.
No, I am. I'm blushing.
But the funny thing is I keep thinking about that song. So maybe it worked. Like
it
maybe
didn't.
Actually
it no,
was
it didn't.
Good.
It
why
wasn't.
Did you like it? Why did you
No,
like
I mean,
it?
I quite liked it. But I think that the yeah. embarrassment I now feel about liking it, because I agree that is an awful lyric. I feel that embarrassment mm-hmm. is actually part of liking Taylor Swift's songs, that you should actually
yes,
feel embarrassed
true.
About it.
Yeah.
There's always been an embarrassment to her lyrics. There's always been an embarrassing side to being a Swiftie, so to speak.
You mean this sort of cheesiness?
The cheesiness and the idea that you're going to cringe a bit and that there are bits where you're thinking, oh, Taylor, no. And then you just like find yourself going back to those songs, you know, and you're listening onto them and you're going, well, actually, I actually really quite like this. And so I think that the experience of feeling embarrassed is part of the experience of enjoying Taylor Swift. And that is something which humanizes this huge, giant megastar. And it's a line you can trace all the way back to sort of like when she was a teenager.
Yeah.
One thing that our colleague Madison Derbyshire said to me that really captured the feeling of this album was that it wasn't very specific in the feelings. Like, she uses a lot of this like poetic, flowery language, which sometimes is beautiful, but also makes it hard to relate to what's going on. Mm-hmm. But in this song, it's confusing. Mm. Like, yes, you're talking about Grand Theft Auto, but
it's vibes.
It's all about the vibe.
Right.
You're feeling like you're in high school, but that doesn't conjure up anything for the audience other than just images of Travis Kelce on her couch.
Yeah. I think I found when this album didn't work, I'd be curious what you both think, but I felt like the themes felt a little repetitive and a lot of them felt after a while quite petty in a way that I like when she puts words to things that are hard, but it felt a little by the end like, I get it. We all hurt you, but now you're on top of the world. And I felt about two-thirds of the way in, kind of like, okay.
Do you both think that if we were to take the original 16-track album, do you think that that is more cohesive for you? Because for me, those first 16 songs do work together and the themes which are in there are actually quite well controlled, quite tightly done.
Totally. If it ended at 16, I think we would be having a different conversation.
We would be.
Right? We've got these themes going through it of the idea of breakups with whoever it might be. And then at the same time, there's the gothic imagery, which recurs throughout it, which I think sort of adds to the idea. She has cobwebs in houses and the house up on the heath, which create the idea of sort of spinsters in lonely sort of windy houses. And all of these go together.
That's true.
And then it sort of ends with Clara Bow, who was a 1920s silent film star. It ends with that track in which Taylor basically hands on the torch. It's as though she's doing another sort of breakup because she's imagining the next generation who is going to come after her. And so for me, it also ties together it ties together well. I mean, that there are problems on the album are to do with the fact that it's, even with 16 tracks, that's still a few too many. I mean, there are some songs which simply don't work. For me, I Can Fix Him, No Really I Can, is a completely pointless song. So pointless, she literally gives up on that song at the end of it. Because at the end of it, it's almost just like, it was all a dream and I woke up. It's an awful song. I can fix him, no really I
Okay, I would love to talk about how this pop star's outrageous level of fame affects how we listen to her music. You know, I didn't really want to do this episode because I had Taylor Swift fatigue. but you both said it was crucial to the culture, and I'm really glad we're doing it. But I've been trying to figure out, like, what's so annoying to me about it, and I think it's that. It's that, like, I feel like I'm stuck in this thing with her where I have to care about Maddie Healy, and I don't want to have to care about Maddie Healy. And, she's my age, and I don't want her to fail because I've watched us ruin so many pop stars, and they end up sort of dancing on Instagram like Britney Spears, and you worry about them. So I want her to stop and slow down, and then I find that maybe I'm being sexist by not liking this album very much or wanting her to stop and slow down. And then I think, wait, this is about the music. I shouldn't even be thinking about her so much when I'm listening to this album, but I just can't separate them, and that feels like a problem somehow. Ludo, what do you think?
Well, I think it is possible to move beyond that. Hard, difficult. She encourages it, of course, and the blanket coverage makes it very difficult to move away from. So it requires an immense effort of will, but it can be tuned out, I think, because I also think of her as being like an actress, really, in terms of how she presents herself. I love her singing, the way she sings, the voice she has. She's found this style. I think one reason for her incredible prolificity is the fact that she has a way that she sounds which she can just like tune straight into. It's almost like the Ramones. You feel like she can do these songs over and over again. She can just go straight into and lock into them. And one reason is the way she sings, her vocal melodies, the intonations, the way she goes and brings life and acts out and is very dynamic in her songs. For me, all of these are like actor's skills. in a way. And so the fact that she's kind of acting out songs, and also the fact that songs have to be dramatic, I mean to say that no pop singer, and certainly no pop megastar, is going to be able to write a song about just feeling, oh, you know, I left this person, but it's all right. I don't really mind. I've turned over a new leaf and everything's great. No, that doesn't work. So you do need to have all of these various sort of tortured feelings, or whatever they might be, in order to go and make the song something that we want to listen to. Yes, she does admittedly encourage us also to read them as sort of memoirs in some way. She does encourage us to do that, but at the same time, I don't think that we have to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's good to remember that, like, all of this is on purpose.
It is.
She's playing as much of a part as, probably playing much more of a part than we are thinking that she is.
Yeah, and I think in this album specifically, it seems like she's more blurring the lines between what song is about who than in the past. Mm-hmm. Like, I think about some of her other big songs, like All Too Well, like no one's questioning who that song is about.
Right.
But we're actually debating, okay, is this line of the song is Joe, this song of the line is Maddie, this line of the song is Travis. Like, mm-hmm. it seems like she has taken a step away from, like, the autobiographical a little bit in this album.
Is she trolling us? Like, do you think the song High School is just, she knows that,
I just don't know who else that one could be about. That one's very specific. I'll never get over the Grand Theft Auto line.
Well, I mean, it makes me like the album more if she's just trolling all of us. I don't
Maybe
know.
Maybe she is.
Yeah. Okay, so my last question is, I would love to hear your predictions. What do you think could possibly be next for this pop star in our culture? Is there a way for her to get bigger? Ludo.
So we have this album coming out, which, as you say, has been streamed 200 million times, 300 million times. The Eras Tour hasn't finished. It's now about to start its European leg, and it will go on until December and be, it's already the highest grossing tour ever. So she is at this sort of maximum inflection point. It's hard to imagine how she could get bigger. I think that this coming year will be quite crucial. I think one thing, oddly enough, will be the American election, where there's already lots of talk about who will Taylor come out for. So I think that we have this situation now where it's like, has she got as big as she can get? And is this album, which has attracted its detractors, is it actually now that that is the maximum point? Or will it actually be the case that this socking amount of music is going to sit there just like sort of attracting everyone's attention over the coming year as she goes and fills out stadiums across Europe, as she gets all of the column inches, which will come from that, when she releases Reputation, her re-recorded version, and then when she goes and comes out for Let's Go and Just to Fantasize Biden in October, and suddenly we see the election being credited to her. It's not impossible to imagine that this would then be literally the year that Taylor Swift was seen to save the world.
That's where we're going. So she won the Super Bowl, and then she
that was the hors d'oeuvre. No. That was just the beginnings of it.
Okay, Taylor, what do you think?
I've been a Taylor Swift fan since I was in the sixth grade. Like, she was, I think, my second or third concert. And so I don't think there's any world in which I stop listening to Taylor Swift. What my guess is what's going to happen is that she was just in this really bad mental and emotional state. And then she had all this music. She just wanted to, like, get it off her chest, tell her side of the story. Show, like, that this has actually been a really difficult moment for her, add some nuance to this, like, Taylor mania moment. And I think she'll just finish Eras and then just take a break and then come back in 2 years with another, like, more classic pop album. And that's where I see this going. I see this being just, like, an experiment in poetry that, you know, didn't really hit all of its marks.
Right.
This feels like, I'll just release everything else that's in my Voice Memos app. You know, you guys have fun with it. I'm going to finish my tour and then I'll come back and do something else.
And then it loops back in and world domination continues.
Absolutely.
Ludo and Taylor, this was such a delight. We will be back in just a moment for More or Less.
With the FT News Briefing, get caught up on what's important in the time it takes to drink your coffee or tea. Our 10-minute podcast runs down the biggest stories of the day, whether it's interest rates, AI, or private equity.
If you're one of those who was hoping for rate cuts, then this looks like bad news.
The idea that private equity is going to die is probably a little bit extreme.
Tune in every weekday to get a handle on the latest business news.
Welcome back to More or Less, the part of the show where each guest says something they want to see more of or less of in culture. Ludo, what do you have?
Well, I'm going to be greedy, actually, because I want to have more rap beef, because at the moment there's a lot of rap beefing going on. You may be aware of it, you both. So there's a big rap beef, which is basically the entire rap world against Drake right now.
Sure,
they're just like putting out diss tracks left, right, and center. The whole thing is really kicking off. I want more of this. I want it to spread out. I'd like to also see, so far it's been all of the male rappers. I'd like to see the women get involved. I want this to really spread out and get very, very big. I want it to be like the world, the WWE wrestling. I want it to be a big all in, more rap beef. Spoilt for choice so far. More, please.
Amazing. Taylor, what do you got?
Keeping with the music theme, I want more like summer pop songs.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we used to have like a song of the summer every year. I was really hoping from that. I was really hoping that Taylor would give us one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we got it.
No.
On this album. We have one from Sabrina Carpenter, which is Espresso. I think Dua Lipa's trying. But I don't think we got it. So I want more just like fun, simple, catchy summer pop songs.
Yeah.
Do you have any, Ludo, that I should listen to?
I mean, I think April here is still really chilly. So I don't think anyone's got their summer pop song heads on. Dua Lipa, Dua Lipa's new album is out on May the 3rd. So that I would be astonished if that didn't have a contender.
Yeah, she's got to have one.
I think she has some contenders. It wasn't future nostalgia for me.
Yeah.
Summer pop songs. I'll think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would like I'm going to do a more too. This is sort of that week in April or those weeks where like the magnolias come into season and then they fall and then the cherry blossoms come into season and then they fall. And every time I look around, there's like a new tree and it's got a new type of flower. And I know that in a couple weeks, they'll all be done flowering and it'll just be green. But my Instagram is full of photos of all of these flowering trees. And I think that some people think that it could be annoying that everybody's posting photos of flowering trees or basic, but I love it and I want more. And I want everyone to just post photos of the flowering trees around them and be as happy about spring as I am. And this is the week of the year that every New Yorker stops being depressed.
Absolutely.
And we should embrace it.
I love that.
Yeah, I think that's it. Ludo, Taylor, what an absolute delight. Please come again soon. And thank you so much.
Happy to talk Taylor Swift anytime.
Thank you very much.
That's the show. Thank you for listening to Life and Art from FT Weekend. Take a read through the show notes. We have links expanding on everything mentioned today, including Ludo's review of the Tortured Poets Department. Every link that goes to the FT gets you past the paywall. Also in the show notes is a link to buy tickets to the US FT Weekend Festival in Washington, D.C. It's coming up on Saturday, May 4th at The Reach at the Kennedy Center. And we have a special discount for podcast listeners in the show notes. I'm Lila Raptopoulos, and here's my talented team. Katya Kumkova is our senior producer. Lulu Smith is our producer. Our sound engineers are Breen Turner and Sam Javinko, with original music by Metaphor Music. Topher Forges is our executive producer, and our global head of audio is Cheryl Brumley. Have a lovely weekend, and we'll find each other again on Monday.